Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
What's the reason to duck? It's here. There's no reason to duck.
With your hosts, Dan Wiederer and Mark Grody.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome in to the Take the North podcast, along with Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune. I am Mark Grody of Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. This, ladies and gentlemen, welcome in. Congratulations to listening to this, because this is the post-draft bonanza Take the North podcast. Is that right, Dan? Is that what it is?
I'm proud of our producer, Adam Sudzinski, for putting together the banner there that proudly proclaims us as Bonanza 2 Electric Boogaloo, which you knew and I knew that we just had to do this. I was going to text you on Saturday night about calling it the draft fatigue episode, because at that point I was ready to bury the draft with a shovel and just get some rest and some relaxation. But we've come back up. We've come back up for air, and there's a lot of ground to cover on everything that happened over that 47-hour span.
Yeah, I mean, in a world where there's infinite information and video and things to break down, you do get to a point where it's like, okay, that's enough. But we're gonna give you everything. We're gonna give you everything. Colston Loveland, Luther Burden III, Ozzie Trapillo, Shamar Turner, Ruben Hippolyte, Zay Frazier, Luke Newman, Kyle Manungai. Those are the Chicago Bears draft picks. We're going to get into some of the specifics here in a second, but I think that we have to do our duty, and I kind of say that in a serious way, to talk about one of the things that had the biggest story of the draft. And I know that people have heard this in every single corner of the internet and on all the draft shows and all the podcasts, but I think that it does need to continue to be addressed. And Dan, that's what went down with Shedeur Sanders, the talented quarterback from Colorado, who could have been, should have been a first round pick, at the very least, probably a second round pick, just based on the talent. He ends up being a fifth round pick to a busy quarterback's room in Cleveland. Dan, what was your thoughts? Yeah, busy to say the least.
I have a lot of thoughts, and we'll try to get through this as quickly and efficiently as possible. It's the first draft I've ever covered in 13 years that the president of the United States has chimed in about a day three draft pick, calling the owners in the NFL stupid in all capital letters, and saying that the player needed to be drafted immediately in all capital letters. And so this was quite the spectacle with Shedeur Sanders over the weekend. And that's seemingly kind of how it always is when you're operating in Coach Prime's orbit. I think there is a lot of ways to go about understanding this, and there's a lot of people who are tapped in with credible sources around the league who have done a really nice job of providing some context on this. I would give Albert Breer some credit on this. I would give Tom Pelissero some credit on this. Now, listen, Tom Pelissero, in the week leading up to the draft, puts together his annual piece where he goes through pretty much every draft eligible quarterback and gives you the good, the bad, the ugly, the dirty, everything in between, with intel from executives, coaches, scouts, people around the league that can tell you how the league views prospects. And so I thought when he put out some quotes leading into the draft about some of these bad pre-draft meetings that Shedeur Sanders had, this was not a smear campaign. This was part of an 18-player deep dive in the quarterback class of 2025. And it gave you some insight into what is giving some people around the league a little bit of pause about Shedeur Sanders. You said it well. Like, listen, like, from a talent standpoint, really talented passer, very accurate, tough as hell, was productive and put a lot of highlights on the tape for you. At the same time, you don't get the sense from people around the league that he has elite arm strength. You don't get the sense from people around the league that he has elite athleticism. There is going to be a developmental process for Shedeur Sanders, and yet he was sort of marketed and branded by his people as this quote-unquote legendary prospect that everyone had to have. And when those two things don't marry up, it creates a lot of confusion and a lot of conversation that gets really complicated and unfortunately really emotional way too quickly.
The only thing I don't understand about that, though, is why then was it because of this PR campaign on his side that in the early mock draft season, he was a top 10 guy? And then we started asking questions like, wow, is he going to drop out of the top 10? Like, and I had people that I talked about the draft were like, oh, I wouldn't go that far. You know, like credible draft people saying that. And then, you know, that's the question, could he possibly drop out of the first round? And to many, that was preposterous. So that's the part that I don't get as far as the talent. I mean, there's something beyond this. And you and I have talked to multiple GMs. Once the word gets out, about now, it could be, you know, the physical traits and things like that. But to add to it, there's no doubt about it that every single GM in this league probably was scared to death of the potential character issues that would have come with Shedeur Sanders as well.
You also have to understand that not every GM in the league is searching for a quarterback in this given draft. And so, like, there are times where you're just kind of going in different directions. Like, I've had conversations with people around the league that said they had Shedeur graded as a low end starter, high end backup, end of day two kind of pick, right? And like a guy that you would roll the dice on there if he was still available. When you start to fall, there are reasons behind that. Some of the reasons are just what people in NFL buildings are willing to deal with. I'll give you a little bit more intel here. Again, I'll try to keep it as abbreviated as possible because we've got a lot of ground to cover. But like, you think about the parallels to Caleb Williams in 2024. This is a prospect that's coming to the league facing questions about his father and his father's involvement in his career, as Caleb Williams did going in the pre-draft process, about his priorities and whether he could be micro-focused on football. Caleb Williams took on grenade after grenade after grenade in the pre-draft process and still wound up as the number one overall pick because the traits are so electric. And when the Bears themselves and other teams did their homework and went through all that stuff, they gained comfort in some of the questions they had about Caleb Williams and said, well, some of this is just nonsense. Some of it, we can deal with it. And the rest of it, the full package tells us that this is the number one overall pick in the draft. If Shedeur Sanders was that talented, he would not have slipped to round five. The problem comes when there's a little bit of disconnect between the talent and you know, the internal perception. And so, look, like, you hear from people in Colorado that this is a really good kid. He's driven. He's liked by teammates. Like, those types of things aren't going to be a problem. This position in this league is the grindiest position in all of sports. And so not everything has to be a spectacle. And when you turn your pro day at Colorado, and not saying Shedeur did this, but his father did, into a marketable event called We Ain't Too Hard to Find Showcase. And then you offer VIP seating and VIP packages to come to this pro day. It makes NFL teams wonder, like, are the distractions worth it, right? Like, are the things that you're going to have to deal with? Is this young man interested enough in being a hardworking day in, day out grinder, or does he want to create content for social media? Does he want to have a really cool YouTube following? Does he want Instagram content that makes everybody talk? There's some viral stuff going around this week with Shedeur Sanders working with Cam Ward and clips where like you could not, I know those guys, like, they know each other well. They can throw barbs at one another, but they could not be more different in Cam Ward's approach to being like, man, I just want to be known as a football player. I don't need all this extra bells and whistles stuff. And I think there was a sense around the league that Shedeur, like, wants the limelight. He wants it, almost needs it, you know? And like, and sometimes you got to let that come to you through success rather than being like, look at me, look at me, look at me. Again, it's a very detailed discussion. I'm going to read you a quote. This is from a pre-draft conversation I had about Caleb Williams in 2024, but I think it applies very well here. And this is from a general manager who has a strong quarterback one in his room and understood how to navigate the early stages of that. He said, I would tell him there will be no commercials in year one. Like, you're not doing that shit. And if that's going to be a problem, then that answers it for me. And that's a conversation with his agency and the people around him, like making sure they're in line. And that's going to be the biggest issue for whoever takes Caleb, is getting to the bottom of this extracurricular stuff. I definitely want to figure out that part first and foremost. Like, he can do everything well as a player. Now let's get into eliminating distractions off the field, because there's a saying out there, and I believe in it, you have to prevent yourself from losing before you can ever win anything. And so that's about eliminating distraction and all the BS. This position is hard enough as it is. So it's a good little thumbnail of how people view the position and what it takes to immerse in it, and some of the reservations that might have been out there on Shedeur Sanders. And another, I'll give you another little anecdote from someone that was in Carolina with Cam Newton in his early years and said, listen, like, he was surrounded at all times by marketing people. And so it wasn't always the fault of Cam, but Cam went to a fashion shoot, I think out of the country. It was like overseas, maybe in Paris or something, but maybe it was in New York or something, but he went to a fashion show shoot a couple days after they got their butt kicked, and it was prearranged before they knew where they were going to get their butt kicked. And the marketing people are trying to get paid, so they set this stuff up, but it rubs people in the locker room wrong. Like, hey man, like, we've got work to do. We just got blown out and we've got to get ourselves back up, and you're off doing this extra stuff. There are layers to this. And so that's some of what gave people around the league pause. And not everything in this world in 2025 has to be a conspiracy theory that has some deeper meaning and you know, nefarious motive behind it.
Yeah, I mean, and one of the biggest things, I mean, it comes off as a heavy duty sense of entitlement to just the way he was talking and the way Dion was talking as well. So you're right. There are tons of layers to Shedeur Sanders.
One last footnote before we move on, because the bottom line is that Shedeur Sanders has an opportunity now, and he's got the ability to make the most of this opportunity. That's the bottom line here. And he's got his we got special guests in the video here. Lawrence and Spieg's coming through.
I'm in their office right now, by the way.
So Shedeur, like he's going to have his chance to write his next chapter of this story. Oh, by the way, Grody, the Cleveland Browns are on the Bears schedule this year. So just mark your calendar for whenever that day will be.
It's on. So is the Bears draft. Let me tell you how I sort of took in this draft and my reactions going through it. I think that Colston Loveland was kind of a microcosm for me for a lot of the draft picks that Ryan Poles brought in. I didn't expect it to be Colston Loveland. I thought that if they were going to take a tight end, I thought it would be Tyler Warren. It wasn't completely shocking that they went with Loveland. But then you look at it and you think about what Loveland brings relative to what Tyler Warren might bring, that Tyler Warren is a little bit more like Cole Kmet, and Colston Loveland is a different type of tight end. So it was easy for me to then say, okay, I get it, actually. Luther Burden III, same sort of situation as in, wow, you drafted a wide receiver that surprises me just because of the Roma Dunze factor from last year and what you have on your roster already, not to mention you just drafted Colston Loveland. But then I think to myself, how ridiculous is it to look at the Chicago Bears and think, yeah, they've got enough wide receivers. They got enough pass catchers. I don't think that the Bears have earned that from me or from anybody, and I'm sure they think similarly. So that, just to give you those first two guys, that is my thought process through a lot of this Bears draft, where I was like, but then I get it. How did you take in some of this, Dan?
Yeah, and we'll get deeper into some of those layers as we go through this episode. I got the sense, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that the Bears probably would have been satisfied with Tyler Warren if Colston Loveland was off the board. You know, I think that they were probably graded fairly similar inside that building, and it was just a matter of this was a better fit, but if one was gone, the other one would have been A-okay in their world. And so that, you know, look, when you're drafting in the top 10, you better get a guy that you believe in. And I think the Bears do believe in the vision that they have for Colston Loveland. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about Luther Burden in a few minutes. I thought day three for me was a day that you got in the car at 1920 Football Drive after the sun went down, and you kind of shrugged and you said, what was that? You know, like, what actually did they get on day three that gives you an adrenaline rush? And that wasn't there. There wasn't a lot of punctuation to this draft. On paper, it looks solid. It doesn't really stand out as impressive. And now it's all about the Bears coming up with developmental plans and visions for how they're going to use all of these picks that you named at the outset. Did you have the similar feeling on Saturday that it was just kind of, it was like procedural? We were doing all these calls on Zoom. We were meeting all these guys. We were hearing what the Bears front office and scouting staff had to say about them. And you're just kind of left each one of those being like, okay.
Yeah, but you know, honestly, like,
That's day three in the draft a lot of times.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. Like, I feel that way a lot of times. You find yourself trying to justify the picks, like Ruben Hippolyte, the linebacker out of Maryland, good leader. He's played a lot of special teams at Maryland. You know, he loved his visit. Apparently was great. It was the highlight of his 30-30 visits this year. So you can, then you're like, I think just what I'm doing with all these play. Okay. I get what you're doing. Probably a special teams guy. Certainly somebody who could provide depth in the linebackers room. Zay Frazier, the cornerback out of UTSA, is like, okay, he's like this, you know, 6'3" tall. He even said it. He's like, I'm tall. I don't know why that quarterback was throwing. I'm tall. So it's an interesting prospect to add to a pretty crowded secondary. Round six, you get the guard, Luke Newman. And I get that now. I mean, that's a backup guard center, probably not a tackle. And then, and I know we'll talk more about running back, Kyle Manungai. It's like almost like, you waited too long to get the running back, and now we have to figure out exactly what Manungai is. So yeah, I understand what you're saying. Like, I wasn't walking out of Hallis Hall thinking the Bears landed some starters, but it's kind of the way I usually feel on day two.
Obligatory reminder that it'll be like October 2028 when we can actually give this draft class a meaningful grade. So all the grades you see out there floating around the internet right now are nothing but just crazy prognostications and forecasts that nobody really has any feel for. And we'll see which direction it goes. Probably obligatory for us now as well to talk about Colston Loveland because he's the headliner of the class. And so you give me your impressions. You know, we got a chance on Friday to meet him at Hallis Hall. You heard some of the things that Colston Loveland had to say as he kind of let us in on his Idaho roots and some of his backstory. But there's a lot here between the football player and the person.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't seem to be messing around type of guy. He's got that country strong attitude and all that. So,
want me to put up a fence? I'm going to put up a fence today.
So all of that checks out. Feels like he'll be a good locker room guy and all that. And, you know, as with a lot of these guys, people say, okay, watch the tape. Watch the separation that this guy gets as a tight end. And it's like, okay, again, see where you're coming from. And it excites me to think that this guy, while he probably needs to put on more weight and while he's probably not your classic blocking tight end at this point, I think that they were trying to tell us that without telling us that, even though Ryan Poles did say his run blocking is probably better than we think it is. I'm looking at him right now at 6'6", 248, that lean mass as just another potentially great weapon to be used in tons of different ways and probably more versatile than you would have gotten from somebody like Tyler Warren, and certainly more versatile than what Cole Kmet will bring you. So I think there's going to be some development pains early on with Colston Loveland at the NFL level, but I think that they got a pretty good product here.
You talk about the separation. That seems to be unanimous from people that I've touched base with about what makes him special is his ability to create separation. He's just very natural with his body movement and his toughness and his ability to just get on defenders and then create room for himself. And that's great for a guy like Caleb Williams to be able to see and understand that he's going to be able to throw to an open target in the middle of the field a lot. And Colston Loveland can do some things for you deep as well. I think that there is an element here where the Bears recognize also that he's young. I think his 21st birthday was just a couple weeks ago, a couple months ago. You could double check the date on that. And so that, like, his body isn't done becoming what it can become. And so I think there's some optimism that, you know, yes, he may be somewhat limited as a blocker right now, but you put a little strength on him and get him stronger. And he's got this tenacity and willingness. All of a sudden he can make that part of his game a strength. And then the question I have, Grody, and you tell me where you are on this, is just like, it's a short-term concern, but the fact is that he has an AC shoulder joint issue that required surgery in January. And so, like, he is going to miss time in the spring. Rookie minicamp is a week after next, and he's not going to participate. OTAs are behind that. He's not going to participate. Like, he's going to have to find a way to get on the field and do some things. Everyone seems to be optimistic, including Colston Loveland, that he'll be okay when the six-month timeline post-surgery kicks in, but that doesn't kick in until training camp has begun. And so it is something to keep an eye on just slightly on the radar there as well.
I think he's going to be okay, but I hate it. I hate when we have to hear about players that are drafted that are hurt. Okay, you got to wait a little while. I mean, what we went through with Karan Amagaji last year, I mean, that affected him heavily, what went down. So I hate it. I mean, we've seen guys like Riley Ridley back in the day. Was he a third round pick?
Oh, man, I've got a Riley Ridley reference way waiting for you in a couple of minutes too. What? This is great.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But finish your Riley Ridley thought. We never thought we'd get here in the Bonanza too.
We just became a team. No, I just remember him being hurt a lot of that training camp. And then he never, pardon the pun, never got his footing in the NFL. Like when they put him in, he did not look comfortable. There was no point. And we were very, it's Calvin Ridley's brother. It's a third round pick. They're telling us at Georgia that this guy didn't get a lot of opportunities. You might have a gem here in the draft. And it didn't work out that way. And maybe it's the talent, but I've seen it too many times where guys get their training camps ripped off at these positions, and then they never catch up.
Tevin Jenkins, another good example. Tevin guy who, Jenkins. Like basically back was a problem, and it was everything became a problem for the next 3+ years.
I can't wait to get to your Riley Ridley, but let's discuss. Yeah, let's discuss Cole Kmet, and I think that you and I run in similar circles at times when it comes to information. And I don't think that there's any reason that Cole Kmet should be worried about his position on this team at this point. I think it's only going to enhance Cole Kmet's opportunities probably. And I think that they really like having Cole Kmet in that room with Colston Loveland.
Yeah. Listen, like, you know what Ben Johnson's vision is for using two tight end sets. He thinks he can complement each one of these tight ends with the other one and really create some mismatch opportunities. There was a mushrooming concern on social media on Thursday night and Friday that this, oh, Cole Kmet stays or number. They're going to trade him before June, or they're going to do this or do that. I don't see that happening. Cole Kmet will be part of this football team in 2025. He's got a $9.9 million base salary this year. With the extension that he signed, the Bears would have an out next offseason at a minimal cost if they chose that they needed to go in a new direction. But that's a year off. And I think now it's like, let's see how this works. Let's figure out if this tandem can pair together really well. And then we'll figure out the future in the future. And so right now, Cole Kmet is a Chicago Bear. He's a valued member of the Chicago Bears. He's a major part of this offense, and he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, let's keep an eye on him, though. I mean, if the chemistry continues to be poor between him and Caleb, then all bets are off. But he is part of this team, no looking back, until we tell you to look back. I know I sort of jumped the gun on this one, Dan, our fifth topic, and that is the wide receiver, talking about it being a luxury pick. And you know, I've been saying this for the last 3 days on The Score, and I already said it on the podcast. It's preposterous to me to think that you could have too many highly drafted wide receivers in this organization. What do you think?
I you just have to manage that. And we'll get into that in a little bit, because I do think it's a situation that Ben Johnson's got to be aware of. It felt like a luxury pick. It felt like a pick that was made based on the board, you know. And this is going to lead me into a small rant here in a minute, but I did want to hear from the general manager and the head coach first to kind of set the table for my rant, and just then kind of just dive into a theme that the Bears were bringing up all throughout the weekend. And so let's just hear a general overview of 2025 draft philosophy from Ryan Poles. Here's what Ryan had to say. I think it was on Saturday night.
Going into the draft, our goal was to really lean on the board. We put a lot of time into it. We want to really to speak to us. I talked about that over the last 2 days. Not forcing, you know, really anything for need, but really just taking the guys, the best guys, and we just keep adding that to the roster to increase competition and to make our football team better. And I thought we were able to do that.
So that's one man's view of things. Ben Johnson commented in a similar vein a little bit later in the program. Here was what Ben Johnson had to say about the weekend.
What was so cool about the last few weeks was getting with Ryan, getting with Ian, getting with Trey, getting with Jeff King, and really huddling up and figuring out how we wanted to sequence the whole board. And to Ryan's credit, he stayed as disciplined as I've ever seen in terms of staying true to how we set it up. Sometimes that gets hard. Sometimes you want to pick for need, but we didn't necessarily do that. I feel really good about the direction we went and every decision we made along the way.
So here's my rant, Grody, and it leads right into Riley Ridley in a minute. But these NFL teams, every one of them, all 32 of them do this. They set up their board, and they have to do so by nature with great confidence and conviction. But then they treat those boards like they're an answer key rather than just a guessing game. And we know year after year after year that the board is wrong. That so Ryan Poles kept saying over the weekend, we wanted to let the board speak to us. He kept saying that the theme in our room was, we've got to let the board speak to us.
The board
is telling us who to pick. You know how many times the Halas Hall draft boards have told lies to the people sitting in the chair. Like, sometimes you might want to turn the volume down on the board. So I'm going to give you some, okay? 2023, Ryan Poles' board told him that Zach Pickens was a better pick than Tank Dell or Josh Downs or Devon Achane. In 2022, the board in that same room told them that Velus Jones was a better pick than N'Kobe Dean or Kirby Joseph or Brian Robinson Jr. The board lies. 2015, you remember Kevin White over Todd Gurley. Okay, that was a lie. 2017, Mitch over Mahomes, Shaheen over George Kittle.
Ooh.
The board was a lie. And then 2019, and the reason I bring this up is because Riley Ridley was drafted at a time when the Bears already had Allen Robinson. They had an emerging guy in Anthony Miller at the time, and they said, we took another wide receiver because it was best player available, and the board told us that that's what we had to take, even though we had other needs. Oh, by the way, Dre Greenlaw, Andrew Van Ginkel, Charles Omenihu were on the board at that time, and they went with Riley Ridley, whose Bears career was nothing but a fizzle flat fart. Let's just say that, right?
Like, it really was.
So the board speaks to you, but sometimes the board isn't trustworthy. And so that's just my little rant. In this case, obviously, I understand the principles and the conviction you have to have in it to run a draft smoothly. But again, it's just a guessing game. It's not an answer key.
Right, no doubt. And just to be clear to our audience, some of those guys were Ryan Pace guys. I'm sure that our big time Bears fans know that. Like Adam Shaheen, man, good God. Adam Shaheen, baby Gronk, who was basically laughed in the face of by Rob Gronkowski when that idea was brought. I think he was more like, who's Adam Shaheen? Who is this guy?
He was a card carrying member of the Chipotle Elite Club, I believe.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He was a Chipotle guy, just never made plays, never played like his body told us he could have. But good points there by you, Dan. Our sixth topic here on our post-draft bonanza show, we got a stud situation here. Adam Stadzinski is going to fire us up. Is that what I'm hearing on the Bryce Young trade now being complete?
March 2023, the deal was made. Studs is going to give us the final results.
Look at how happy he looks. Look at him.
All right, guys. So real quick, what I want to do is I want to recap for everyone what the bones of that trade was. So on the paper, the Bears traded the number one overall pick in the 2023 draft for the Panthers' first and second round picks that ended up being the number 9 and the number 61 overall picks, plus a 2024 first round pick and a 2025 second round pick, and of course, DJ Moore. The Panthers, with the number 1 overall pick, took Bryce Young. Their part of the trade's been done for a while. Next up, we fill in the Bears' pieces of this trade. We know about DJ Moore. With that first round pick in 2023, they took Darnell Wright, after trading back a spot with the Eagles, who took Jalen Carter at number 9. So the Bears at number 10 took Darnell Wright. That fourth round pick's going to come into play in a minute, so hang tight. The Bears in the second round of that draft took Tyrique Stevenson. Then in 2024, we know the Bears end up with the number 1 overall pick in the draft. They take Caleb Williams. Now, to complete this portion of the real quick, also in 2024, that fourth round pick that the Bears got from the Eagles to move back a spot to draft Darnell Wright became Torrey Taylor. Then we come forward to this year, 2025, and we know that that second round pick became Luther Burden III. So the final results are Caleb Williams, DJ Moore, Darnell Wright, Torrey Taylor, Luther Burden III, and Tyrique Stevenson. 6 players that the Bears got out of that one move.
But they're all starters, right?
Bears win.
Bears are 1-0.
I think that's a key thing here is these guys are all starters. Now, Luther Burden III is going to be the third wide receiver, but they're all key roles on this team. So, yeah, that's the bones on which Ryan Poles has built this entire roster now. Like that.
Close to a best case scenario, to be honest.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It really was.
When you trade for a future first and you end up with the number 1 overall pick, that is the dream scenario.
That's awesome. Good stuff, Studs.
Yeah. There you go. So the trade is now complete. And I think we can officially say that the Bears won that one.
All right. Well, there's a name that you mentioned that is relevant to the post-draft bonanza, and that is Luther Burden. Dan, when I was – I mean, we listened to him, and you could tell he's a little bit pissed off that he was not a first round, or he just doesn't like us. But I think he's got a big old chip on his shoulder, and he's also got these eyes, man. Like, the eyes of – and I mean this in the best possible way. Some athletes just have those eyes, like, just get me – on the field. And this is what we've heard about this guy in terms of his competitive drive. There was a no nonsense sort of feeling about him. And he's one of those guys that, assuming he makes it and he gets to where the Bears want him to be, I'm looking forward to seeing what that product looks like on the field.
Look, Grody, we talked about him in Bonanza One as one of my day two guys that could be there for the Bears that were really intriguing. He's intriguing because of how electric he is when the football's in his hands. You can get it to him in a lot of different ways. The Bears feel like they can use him outside more than Missouri did. They feel like they can run him on jet sweeps and ball carrier plays and tunnel screens and things that just get the ball in his hands and let him go operate. We've heard the comparisons to Steph Diggs over time of a guy that just really is explosive and plays with an edge. I think what we've seen in our first couple interactions with Luther Burden is that edge is pretty present, and that's going to be something that the Bears want to tap into. Now, there was a pretty significant production dip in 2024 at Missouri from what it was his sophomore year in 2023. He kind of shrugged it off as just fewer opportunities. But there are folks around the league that will tell you that one of the reasons that Luther Burden was available on day two is because he didn't necessarily handle the production dip as well as he should have, that he can become a little bit disengaged when the ball is not finding him as much as it should. And that's relevant because he's joining a talent-stocked offense here that we'll talk about in a minute. So there are warning labels that come with Luther Burden, and he's going to have to figure that out. I think what the Bears did here is they rolled the dice, and they saw a guy that they think is super competitive. They saw a guy that's passionate for football. And I asked Luther about his passion for football on Saturday, and you could tell by the way he answered that, like, that wasn't just, you know, words. This is a sport that means a lot to him because of the doors it's open for him. And he's going to be one of those guys that you're not going to have to get interested in the actual playing of football. You've had some interactions in the locker room with guys who were headed to the ping pong table more quickly than they were headed to the practice field, right? Like, so that's not going to be an issue with Luther Burden, but you do have to understand that as a coaching staff, now you've got to find a way to bring out the best in him while muting some of the worst in him. And so that's going to be Antoine Randle-El's job really starting out, because it seemed like he was the guy who spent the most time with Luther Burden during the pre-draft process at Halisaw. He's the guy that's going to be working most closely with him. If you want to trust any guy in that building to keep a guy juiced up, Antoine's probably the guy to trust him to, but it is something worth mentioning.
Yeah. And, you know, we got a chance to talk to some scouts. They're aware of it, you know, but it was kind of their answer, like, just to sum it up, is just wait till you see the compete level in the games. Obviously, you need that in practice. We saw the problems that the Bears had in some of their practices last year, so they're cognizant of it. And that does bring us to our next topic. With all of these weapons that we're talking about, with DJ Moore and Rome Odunze, Burden, Loveland, name your guy, there's a lot going on here. Why don't we listen to Ben Johnson from this past Saturday on he has to now create this environment of making everybody, I guess, quote unquote, happy in this offense. Here's Ben Johnson.
Listen, we talked about it the moment the players got back in the building, call it 3 weeks ago now, it was going to be a competitive environment. There is no depth chart right now. If you want to play, you got to go earn it. If you want a role, you got to go earn it. They know that. So we were very straightforward and honest with them when they came into the building. I think all we did this weekend was we might have just turned up the notch just a couple of dials for certain people in the building. So that's a good thing. That's a healthy thing. That's where you bring out the best, not only in your team, but in each individual. So what I'm going to be curious to see is what guys look like when the ball's not in their hands on offense. Okay. Yeah, you're right. We have a lot of weapons. And so how are you going to run your route when you might not be number one in the progression? Okay. How are you going to block for your teammate when he has the ball? Because if you do those things right, then as a coaching staff, we're going to want to get you the ball a little bit more. So it all ties together. It all goes hand in hand. And that's the beauty behind it.
I think we're talking about managing egos at the end of the day here. And yes. I guess, you know, you and I, as reporters, will probably put these guys to the test in some ways, too, because they always talk. I'm not just talking about the Bears, but athletes in general. talk a big game about wanting to win. Hey, whatever I got to do for the team to win, I just want to win. The most important thing for me to do is win. The individual stuff is not that important. Let's find out this year with all these potential moving parts on offense if they're being real about that.
Ryan Pohl said something on Friday night about one of his big fears in Chicago is winning, right? And what comes with winning, it's this increased hunger for the spotlight, this increased hunger for the ball. And he said he dealt with it in Kansas City, where all of a sudden, you know, you are, as you just said, managing egos and trying to keep people happy. Ben Johnson, as a first-time head coach, is going to have plenty of proven offensive acumen to figure out a plan to get these guys involved. But this is the first time that he's ever had to take on the role of, again, keeping everybody happy and taking on that leadership role of managing that at the level he's going to have to manage that. If somebody is disgruntled, how do you go ahead and fix it? I think there's internal trust inside Hallis Hall that he understands these things, that one of the reasons the Bears wanted to hire him is because he seems to have a knack for knowing what buttons to push and when to push them with players. But listen, like when he's in Detroit the last couple of years with these offenses that are scoring points that people in Chicago could only dream about seeing scored, you know, his wide receiver three is Tim Patrick and Josh Reynolds, right? Like his second tight end is Brock Wright. Those guys know that they're role players. DJ Moore, Rome Odunze, Luther Burden, they've never been a role player in their entire life, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're not even eager to become a role player. You know, Cole Kmet, Colson Loveland, they really unselfish guys. It will be new for them to take on diminished roles and have to try to blend in at certain times when somebody else is hot. And so managing the emotions of that, it's not easy. And this league has more than a few examples of where that doesn't work out well, right? And things get a little bit sideways. We mentioned Stephon Diggs earlier in the program, and one of the reasons he's not in Minnesota anymore is because when Justin Jefferson became Justin Jefferson, it bothered Stephon Diggs to not have as big of a role, and he couldn't always channel that in the right direction. And so Antoine Randall, Ben Johnson, Ryan Poles, they all have a hand in trying to keep all of these guys kind of focused on the right things and understanding what the ultimate mission is, which is win, which is what Ryan Pohl said very eloquently on Friday, is that like, we got to win football games. Like I can't be worrying about all this other stuff right now. And so like, for me, the kind of footnote is like, I can't criticize the Bears for not having enough blue chip talent and then criticize them for picking a potential blue chip talent. But it is worthy to acknowledge that there are some battles that you're going to have to fight and win in order for this to work.
All of this for Caleb Williams, because it always comes back to Caleb Williams. We haven't even mentioned Caleb Williams today, but as if there wasn't pressure on him last year when everybody was like, whoa, this is the most comfortable offense you could possibly, the nest that they have built for Caleb Williams. And maybe it was good. Maybe it was good because, you know, Caleb did struggle at times distributing the ball. Obviously, you know, we've been obsessed over the targets to Cole Kmet. We know that the chemistry was slow to come between DJ Moore and Caleb Williams. That obviously needs to take a big jump. But now that you have added Luther Burden, you've added Colston Loveland, you've added Ben Johnson. I said this last year, semi-jokingly, the only person that could screw it up now is the quarterback. And unfortunately, we've said that way too many times in this Chicago Bears world. But here we are again, where a quarterback that is drafted number one overall has to, no matter who's on there, has to take the next step, let alone with all these supposed new weapons that the Bears have. I don't know if he feels pressure. I mean, he said he doesn't, but my God, does he have to make the jump this year?
Go get him, kid. Like I had a conversation earlier today, Grody, with someone where like you and I just spent 37 plus minutes talking about all these other topics that are supremely relevant, and they wouldn't have made it into Bonanza 2 Electric Boogaloo if they weren't important. But this one that we're talking about now is really, this is the front page story. Does Caleb Williams make the jump in year two that he's supposed to make as the number one overall pick in the draft? They've given him one of the best and proven play callers in the National Football League right now. They went out and gave him a interior of his offensive line that has a bunch of guys who are proven and durable and dependable and should give him time back there. He's got weapons for days. By the way, maybe they'll add more if they go out on the street and shop for a running back here soon. He's got everything right in front of him. And now it's all about, is he good? Is he good enough to elevate this franchise into an annual playoff contending, championship contending team? Nothing else matters. And so this is right. Like they've given him everything. And so for me, you zoom out, you see everything else that we talked about and you go, Well, wait a second. Like 2025 is defined by how well Caleb Williams plays, and the Bears' future is defined by how well Caleb Williams plays in 2025. And so I guess that makes this a pretty important year, doesn't it?
No doubt. And, you know, I find it interesting that, you know, it's still true that if Caleb is good or great, it cleans everything up. And we talked about that last year. Doesn't matter what the offensive line is like. Doesn't matter if your quarterback is elite, then it cleans up a lot of stuff. I feel like what might be cleaning things up this year, not just for the quarterback, but for the running backs, which we're going to talk about here in a second, is what they have done with their interior. Like, you know, I keep hearing, you know, talking about the offensive line, and I know maybe the depth is not there, and we're still trying to figure out exactly how the left tackle and the right tackle, the configuration is. But when we talk about Drew Dahlman, Joe Tooney, and Jonah Jackson, that is something that is like, it feels like so long ago, but it's sitting right there, and it's going to, I don't remember who it was that said it. It was one of the offensive guys. It might have been Declan Doyle. But somebody said something to the effect of having those three guys now allows Caleb Williams to, instead of moving backwards, can step into the pocket. Maybe the same thing. Maybe DeAndre Swift, if he is to be the Bears' starting running back, maybe he could take a step forward as well with that interior of the offensive line. But the running backs room, we talked about it tons, Dan. It was a position that we kind of thought the Bears would probably go after and get somebody just because of all of the available running backs that were in the deepest running backs draft in the last 7 or 8 years or so. Yet they end up with Kyle Manungai in round 7 of the draft. None of the other guys that we talked about. What did you think about the running back position in the draft and right now going forward?
Yeah. It felt like a missed opportunity, if I'm being honest, because we talked for weeks about how this running back class was as deep and talent packed as it had been in recent memory, and how what an opportunity this was for the Bears to find somebody somewhere on day one, day two, or day three to really just upgrade that running backs room. And yet they wind up with Kyle Manungai, RB22, in this particular draft, which didn't feel like the best case scenario when this week started. I'm going to hear a little bit.
RB22.
And by all accounts, listen, Kyle Manungai is a good kid and a tough runner, and he's going to do everything he can to make the best of his NFL journey. But that wasn't the best case scenario that the Bears were dreaming about at this time last week as they were approaching the draft. So we're going to hear from Ryan Poles here for a minute, and then we will further this discussion, because I asked Ryan Poles a little bit about how the waves of the NFL draft may have crashed over the Bears instead of sending them surfing and hanging 10 throughout this draft.
I feel like the running back board was kind of dancing away from you a bunch of times throughout the last 48 hours. Can you kind of describe the dynamic of that? And is there any sort of human nature frustration that comes with kind of having to dance that dance?
Yeah, I've always felt that. I mean, every draft has like just pockets that you just don't fall into. And again, if you're going to be disciplined and you're going to let the board kind of dictate how you do things, it just happens that way. So because of that, you end up in some really cool situations and really acquiring talented players. It might come from a different position that maybe you would have liked to. But at the end of the day, you're increasing the talent on your football team. And I do think you can get into a lot of trouble if you start trying to manipulate things to get into certain pockets where you end up hurting your team long term.
So, Grody, let's have this discussion, because on Thursday afternoon, there was just an absolute it was just buzzing at the Bears' potential move up to number 5 to get Ashton Jeanthe. And so for a while, for hours, if not days, if not weeks, there was a big portion of Chicago dreaming of Ashton Jeanthe joining the Bears offense. Was that smoke real? To an extent, I think the Bears were incredibly interested in who Ashton Jeanthe was as a playmaker, but
it was not completely bogus. Let's just put it that way.
So I think they made their calls, and I think they were aggressive calls, and I think they were exploring the possibility of going up to get Ashton Jeanthe. But, you know, we referenced that the Raiders might be a team that was targeting Ashton Jeanthe. And we referenced Pete Carroll telling John Spytek to be careful here when talking about Ashton Jeanthe. And certainly they ended up getting him. So to get above the Raiders, the Bears would have had to go up to 5, which was Cleveland's pick after Jacksonville traded up to 2. And I think Ryan Poles just sensed that, listen, like the cost up there is too much for us. We didn't want to give up one or both of those second round picks. We didn't want to give up one of those second round picks and something else in our draft wallet. And so they backed off on that. The next night, I think you could make a strong case that Trevion Henderson would have fit really nicely in Ben Johnson's offense, and that the Bears were probably pretty excited about the possibility of him coming to number 39. Well, maybe they didn't want to wait until number 39. And maybe they made some calls on Friday night to try to get up there as well. It's my understanding that there were multiple attempts to get up and potentially get themselves a Trevion Henderson. And ultimately, the New England Patriots, one pick in front of the Chicago Bears, took Trevion Henderson. And they said in their post-draft analysis, GM Elliott Wolf stood up there and said, look, we were taking calls. We were thinking about trading that pick. And then ultimately, we decided Trevion was too good to pass up. And so we drafted him. So then you get into day three, and I'll get your thoughts on this, because I would guess that Ryan Poles wakes up on Saturday morning thinking, hey, there's still like 14 of the top 20 backs in this class still available to us. We're picking seventh on the day here. Certainly we can go get ourselves a back, and the headliner of our day three class isn't going to be a speed linebacker named Ruben Hippolyte. We're going to go cash in on a running back. I mean, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it was. Well, I don't know if I completely agree, because it felt like, and maybe this is just me looking at the shiny objects, but all the guys that we had talked about, like the pack of like five or six or seven guys that we kept on discussing in the draft, were taken off the board. So I don't know.
Not the Plinko chip.
Yeah, that's true. That's
true. He was still available Saturday.
Yeah.
Not when the Bears picked.
That's true. And it's either, and we don't know, like if they had a bad grade on him, if there was something about him they didn't like, or like you said, that they were just totally and completely sticking to the board. But I looked at it more like they were just kind of out of the guys that were on their board that they thought could actually be contributors by the time it rolled around, just like we were talking about at the beginning. When you get into the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh rounds, it does tend to be a crapshoot. And maybe even in this day of the running back, where it seems to have gained more momentum, you're not just grabbing a running back in any round and thinking that guy's going to be a major contributor.
Interesting nugget out of New York, where the Giants drafted Cam Scadabo at 105. Brian Daboll and Joe Shane admitted that there were very serious debates going on in the room on whether they should take Scadabo or Purdue offensive tackle Marcus Bowe. They ended up taking Cam Scadabo, and as fate would have it, Marcus Bowe landed to them later in the same draft. And so they made a decision, and it all fell together for them. I think it's an interesting contrast, because it didn't fall together for the Bears. And when they made that trade back in round four, it seemed to be a tell that what they wanted to do early in round four was already blown up in their face. And so they said, let's go add more picks and move back, because our ideal scenario didn't occur. And so then they moved back 23 picks in round four. Well, guess what? There's a run on backs in that span. Four backs go: Trevor Etienne, Woody Marks, Jaquez Hunter, and Dylan Sampson all go between where the Bears were originally slotted to pick and where they ultimately ended up picking in round four. And it's just one of those sort of cautionary draft tales where it just felt like the Bears were sprinting. They felt like they had some things in their grasp, and then a sewer hole opened up and they fell right through it. And we're like, oh man, you know, Now we got to make the best of this.
Well, so then here we are back to the beginning with the Bears depth chart and DeAndre Swift, Roschon Johnson, and Travis Homer. Sure feels like they need something a little bit more to, because none of those guys are sure things. So DeAndre Swift, you know, again, maybe it was the situation he was in. Maybe the interior of the offensive line will help him. Maybe another year under Caleb's belt will help him, but it didn't go great last year. Same for Roschon Johnson. Seems like he took a step back. And Travis Homer is a bigger contributor on special teams at this point in his career. So that can't possibly be the depth chart going into OT or into training camp. We'll just put it at. But I also don't know what the solution is at this point, Dan.
Ian Wheeler, Kyle Manunge, they float in your boat there. Like this is where they are, right? And so now you've got to decide whether you want to be aggressive and try to address that position in a different way, or whether you want to just kick the can down the road and say it just didn't work out for us in the 2025 offseason, where a lot of other things worked out really well for us. We just didn't address the running back position the way we envisioned that we could. When you're talking about the guys that are still inside that, you know, street free agent flea market, you're talking about some older injured guys, you know, a Nick Chubb, yeah, a Cam Akers, a J.K. Dobbins. You know, there's some other guys out there like a Jamal Williams, Jeff Wilson, I think Gus Edwards, still on the open market. So like you could explore that and figure out if one of those guys can fit and help you in some capacity, but it does feel really like a plan G or H based on what the Bears thought that the draft would present to them this weekend. And so now you have to make the best of your situation. And I'm certain that Ryan and Ben will put their heads together to try to do so.
The offensive line depth chart has once again come into question for the Chicago Bears. I mean, and in particular, just the tackle spots. I think we got a pretty good idea. Drew Dolman is your center. Joe Tooney is your left guard. And Jonah Jackson is going to be your right guard, I would think. The tackle situation is interesting because you did draft in the second round, Ozzie Trapillo, the offensive tackle out of BCU, who has played more yeah. right tackle than left tackle in his career. Obviously, you have Darnell Wright on the right side right now. I think they'd be open to moving him to the left side, or do they think they can squeeze another year of quality play, okay play, out of Braxton Jones? It's a work in progress. I don't think there's been a decision yet on that.
I still say repeatedly that the Braxton Jones injury situation is more important than we've probably framed it to be, because he's not healthy and you don't know what you're going to get out of him when he comes back. The Bears want him to add weight, right, to be able to anchor better and handle bull rushes, and yet he still has to rehab and come from a season-ending ankle injury that required surgery. And so there's a lot there that the Bears have to acknowledge as uncertain, and they do acknowledge that. So now you go out and you use a second-round pick on Trapillo, which if you want to try him at right tackle, it means you got to try Darnell Wright at left tackle, which Ryan Poles said in the pre-draft press conference that they're open-minded to. My question to you, I guess, Grody, would be is how long do you let that experiment go when you're trying to create stability that hasn't been there on the offensive line for so long? How long do you play around with combinations rather than the sort of annual August question that we ask? Is it more important to have competition, or would you rather have it solidified and everybody know what the line looks like?
Yeah, we seem to ask that question every single year, and I still can't quite get a read on. Look, they've said it out loud that it's possible that they can move Darnell Wright from the right side to the left side. It doesn't feel good to do to a guy that has progressed to the level that he has. And I'm saying, obviously, he's not a Pro Bowl or an All Pro yet. My gut is to not mess with something like that, especially going into this season where you have to make a big jump for any number of reasons. And we don't know. We don't know if Ozzie Trapillo, as good of a prospect as he looks like, is he ready to step in on day one to if he is to play right tackle, and then you just assume that Darnell Wright can go over to the left side. I mean, I think that's somewhat of a leap of faith to just, while it sounds good, it is something that you just, it's not by far, far from being a slam dunk.
The word dependable is the one that's come up the most with Trapillo. And it's like, and I got to remember how to pronounce that. Are we saying that right? Is it Trapillo?
It's Trapillo.
So like, you're going to lean into the experience he had at BC, the things he's able to do, very penalty free on his resume. That's a guy that you know what you're getting out of him. They've got to turn that into something. I think it's low key a defining pick in this draft is what they're able to get out of him. If he can become a success story on a higher level than Braxton Jones was a few years ago, where you draft a guy and he becomes better than you thought he was going to be, then the Bears are in a much better position. I'll throw this one at you here as well, because the Bears have to celebrate the eight players that they drafted. But is there an alternate universe where if their top two picks had been Kelvin Banks and Trevion Henderson as opposed to Colston Loveland and Luther Burden III, that they're more excited than they are currently, because that would have been something that was happy for them?
The answer is yes.
Yes.
Right? And so that's just sometimes the game of the draft. And so you got to figure it out. And I do think that leads us to try to like put our eyes on things in May and June at a time when offensive line play is hard to evaluate because there's no pads and there's nothing really happening, to try to figure out what combinations they're messing around with and which ones seem to be working.
Dan, tell everybody here why you and I fell in love with Shamar Turner when he was at the podium. Shamar Turner, the Bears' second round defensive lineman pick, the defensive lineman out of Texas A&M. Why do we like him so much?
Bro, I'll tell you why, bro. He has energy, bro, and he's super excited, bro. Both on the Zoom call on Friday night and in the in-person meeting on Saturday, like, that guy's exuberant. And I thought you asked a really good question to him about one of his defensive line mates coming up, because we were like really drawn to Grady Jarrett when they yes. introduced him in March. And now you've got another guy that we're really drawn to because they're just like high energy, highly driven, and like excited to be in a building employed as football players, right? Like, let's go.
Oh,
kind of
yeah.
attitude with the every smiles, answer they give.
The yeah. smiles on these face between Trapillo and Turner, man, the smiles just were not fading.
And look, like, that's fun even more fun is when you look at the highlight reel of a Shamar Turner and you say, like, you know, again, we talked about this on the radio earlier, that the word attached to him most prevalently is violent. Like, this dude plays with a high motor and he's out to kill you, right? Like, he literally crosses the lines of football field and he wants to kill you. And like,
take your lunch money too, I think he said.
Yeah. And Dennis Allen's going to tap into that and he's going to use the speed. I'll tell you one concern I have with the pick is that he had a rod inserted into his leg last year and it was a stress fracture that everybody says is fine and he's recovered and he's on the right track. But is it a coincidence that he developed a stress fracture in his leg after they moved him from defensive end to defensive tackle and he had to put on a bunch of weight to do it? And then all of a sudden his body is like, you know, reacting in a different way. I don't know, because it's another pre-injured guy that you have to keep an eye on. You know, like I always remember Ryan Pace used to say, we try to ask ourselves in the draft room, why would this guy fail? You know, if this pick doesn't work out, why would it not work out? So for my answer with Shamar Turner is like, just he's pre-injured, and we look back 3 years from now and be like, remember when we were talking about that rod in his leg? It certainly won't be his passion. It certainly won't be his energy that takes him down. It'll just be like, can he find a way there?
Yeah, I mean, it's something to monitor, and like we don't expect him to necessarily start. He probably will be part of a rotation eventually, I think.
Who do you think are the starters right now?
Well, yeah, we know Billings is. We know Montez. We're doing the whole line. Billings, Montez Sweat. I'd imagine that Gervon Dexter is getting the first crack, right?
Where you put, I think Grady Jarrett in front of Billings, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. That's crazy to think about, just considering how effective, you know, Andrew Billings has been. But yeah, man. I mean, if somebody, it would probably have to be, yeah, Grady Jarrett. And then, then it gets very interesting when we talk about the other side with Mr. Odangbo, who is going to be fascinating to watch and see exactly how they use him all over that line. I mean, that's what they keep saying, that you're not just going to see him in one spot. And, you know, the sack numbers would dictate that, you might need to do some things to scheme him to the quarterback.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. There's a different style up front than there has been in the last couple of years. And so the priorities of what the Bears want out of their interior defensive alignment and even on the edge a little bit, it'll change a little bit. And so we'll get a feel as things go on where Dennis Allen is sort of leaning with the rotation he wants to put together.
Couple more here. Speed round. The other defensive ads.
Speed round with quotes and speed there, right? Well done.
Yeah. Reuben Hippolyte and Zay Frazier. Just for everybody, it's spelled Z-A-H. It is pronounced Zay Frazier, the tall cornerback for the Bears. Studs is back. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. So the Bears, first of all, I hate to backtrack, but just briefly, I think that the Bears' defensive tackle depth chart is going to read Andrew Billings and Grady Jarrett at the top. That doesn't mean they're going to get the most snaps in the game, but I think that's the top of the depth chart. That's my prediction. But anyway.
Why wouldn't it probably?
Yeah. I mean, like, neither would I. But what you guys said to would also not have a problem with that. That's just what I think. Anyway, so are we all familiar on this podcast with the term RAS, relative athletic score? For those of you listening at home, I will explain it for you. This is essentially, it's a big topic around draft time. And basically what this does is it takes a player and it adds all these measurables, whether it's arm length, 40 time, three cone time, stuff like that. And it creates a measure. It creates a 0 to 10 scale relative to your peers at your position. And then so the higher the number, the more athletic you are, basically. So the Bears in this draft and in past drafts, this has been a big thing with Ryan Poles that we've noticed. A lot of guys that he drafts, especially in the later rounds, have really high RAS scores. So in this draft, not only were the Bears drafting guys with a lot of high 40 times, in fact, at one point on Saturday, I think it was Daniel Jeremiah in the NFL Network was like, it's like the Bears have a spreadsheet just sorted by speed, and that's how they're picking. So anyway, here are the relative athletic scores starting with the Bears' second round pick, Ozzie Trapillo. I think that we can agree that the first two guys in this draft, like, we don't, their athletic score, I don't think mattered all that much because it was already high. Anyway, Ozzie Trapillo has a relative athletic score of 8.89, 40 time of 5.2. That is good for an offensive tackle. Ruben Hippolyte, relative athletic score of 8.22. His 40 time was 4.42, which is absolutely flying for a linebacker.
Studs, little footnote on that. That would have been not only the fastest time among linebackers at the combine had he been invited this year, but it would have been the fifth fastest combine time all time if it had been run in Indianapolis instead of at Maryland's Pro Day.
And yes. Now, moving forward, Zay Frazier had a relative athletic score of 9.36, his 40 time 4.36. Another guy is just an athletic freak. Luke Newman, relative athletic score of 9.96. His 40 time was 5.08.
9.96.
Really,
really good.
That's really good for an offensive guard.
Right.
And finally, relative. Kyle Monick. Kyle Monick, not a big RAS guy. His RAS score is 4.03. I think really hurt by his 40 time that was just 4.6, which isn't that great for a running back. And so right. That's probably why he was there in the seventh round. But everybody but Monagai has an absolutely – is between a 0 or between an 8 and a 10 on their RAS. So Ryan Poles still has a type. They might be – they got different people in his ears, but he very much still has a type.
Great stuff. Great stuff. All right.
Grody, just a footnote on that. I remember a few years ago when you were grinding Holy Cross tape and you said, there's this athletic guard named Luke Newman. You're going to have to keep your eyes on him in the future. This Holy Cross guard is so athletic that he might appeal to the decision makers at Ellis Hall.
No, get him to Michigan State quickly, man. And right from Michigan State to the Bears as fast as we possibly. Stick around here, studs, because I see you're playing a part in our final official topic here on the post-draft Bonanza show. Pick 109, Studsley.
Okay, so this is a little confusing. So let me make sure that I'll go as fast as I can, but try not to confuse our audience. This goes back to last year. The Bears traded, now bear with me here, the Bears traded their 2024 fifth-round pick to the Buffalo Bills for Ryan Bates. The Bills then traded that fifth-round pick back to the Bears in exchange for the Bears' 2025 fourth-round pick, which became pick 109 in this draft, as the Bears selected Austin Booker last year. Then the Bears traded pick 109 back to the Bears when the Bears moved back from pick number 41 in this draft, and they weren't done yet. Pick 109 came up in the fourth round, and the Bears decided, all right, we don't want this pick anymore. They then sent it back to the Buffalo Bills as the Bears moved back in the fourth round, and the Bills finally made a selection at 109. So that, I believe, changed hands three or four times before somebody finally made the pick.
That's amazing.
Kentucky defensive tackle.
Yeah.
Deion Walker was the pick.
Yes.
Deion Walker.
Yes.
Yes.
So there you go. That was just a fun bit that people were tracking as the Bears and Bills just kept tossing that pick back and forth.
Very confused.
Now the good part is that, is it this weekend, Dan? The rookie minicamp?
You gotta wait a week. You gotta wait a week.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Next week is the rookie minicamp. We get to see it in motion, and a bunch of rookies are like, who's that guy? Who's that? Wait a minute. I didn't realize the Bears had that many rookies. Okay.
Where's their top pick? Why isn't he out there? Oh, yeah, he's not practicing.
Anything else here, Dan? We just did hour plus, another hour plus bonanza. Have we left anything out here, Dan? And if we have, we'll probably record another podcast in a couple days.
I'll just throw one more nugget on here. Zay Frazier. You told me how to pronounce his name today. I'm learning a lot about pronunciations here. Ryan Poles shared on Saturday evening that he got a text a little while back from Al Harris, who said, you got to see this corner from UTSA. I think we should take a long, hard look at him. He'd probably be available on day three, somewhere around round four or round five. Whoa. Al Harris, very clairvoyant there and giving Ryan Poles some juice to go get Zay Frazier. And now the Bears have to turn him into something under the direction of Al Harris.
Yeah. Trey Koziel said that he's got great instincts, got great ball skills. He's tall, 6'3", a one-year starter, did have six interceptions last year. He's interesting, big, tall guy, I guess, maybe Jalen Johnson-ish, but probably bigger and stronger. So a guy to keep an eye on. This has been fun. I don't know which Bonanza show is my favorite because we're in the moment right now. This was an absolute blast getting to talk about all these Bears draft picks. And now it gets even more interesting as we start to see it once the mini camp goes down next week. So we are going to get out of here for today. For that guy right there, he is Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune and frequent Score contributor. For our excellent executive producer, Adam Studzinski, cameos today, ladies and gentlemen, by the afternoon show at the Score. I am in their office, for the record. I thought it was the safest place to go since they're on the air right now.
You'd think.
But yeah, you'd think. So we got cameos from Lawrence Holmes and from Matt Spiegel, and Chris Tannehill even bounced in here as well. So it's good to see all of those guys. And thank you to everybody for listening to and watching the Take the North podcast.
Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.